Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We begin hour two of the program by welcoming the Dakota political junkies. This week, Dana Ferguson with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader and Seth Tupper with the Rapid City Journal. Dana Ferguson, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
Seth, welcome as well.
Thanks.
Dana, let's start with you and some of the things that you've been working on lately, and maybe we should begin with marijuana and the ballot measure with sort of a misprint or typo or some sort of language trouble. Do you want to give us the little background?
Sure. So the Legislative Research Council back in June took a look at one of the proposals that might be on the ballot in 2018 that deals with essentially decriminalizing possession of recreational marijuana. And they said it wasn't going to bring down the jail estimate, cost estimate, as much as supporters would have liked. I was sort of interested in that conversation they were having, whatever discrepancy was there. So followed up with the LRC and found out that measure wasn't going to have quite the effect that supporters were saying that it would. The LRC has indicated that the way it's worded now, because of a little issue, it wouldn't effectively decriminalize possession of marijuana. Instead, it would impact only the possession of paraphernalia. So obviously that is interesting and kind of a big deal for those who are aiming to campaign for that ballot measure. Supporters have said since then that they fundamentally disagree with the reading of that wording. They have structured it in such a way that they think the intent is clear. They hope that the legislature or the courts will support them if that measure is passed. But obviously, that's going to be a ways off yet because it's only 2017 for now. And we won't get to see whether that makes the ballot until later on this year.
So are they continuing to gather signatures with the current wording then?
Yes, they are. The prime supporters and sponsors of that campaign have said that they are going to move forward. They're not going to start over the clock at this point and submit a new document with their measure on it, changing those words. They're going to keep getting signatures for their petition. They have been working on that for, I think, 3 or 4 months now. So in theory, they already have quite a few signatures gathered, and they need to get about 14,000 of them before November. Their sponsors are optimistic that they can do that. It seems as though this could put a pretty significant hurdle before them as they continue to gather signatures. I would imagine that some of those individuals interested in this petition are going to have questions about whether this measure would do what supporters say it's going to do and whether those steps that they believe they are going to be able to take will actually be feasible in a very conservative legislature and with courts that it's unclear whether they'd be supportive of this measure and the measure's supporters.
So, Dana, how complicated is it 3 months in to start from scratch, reword it? What goes into that to where they could maybe salvage this a little earlier?
If the supporters wanted to resubmit, they still have the ability to do that. That comes with some serious questions, though. If they resubmitted a new proposal changing the language in question, they would have to throw out all of the ballot signatures that they have right now, which in theory could put them pretty far behind as far as their schedule goes. And it would take up to 60 additional days for the Attorney General to look over that proposal, approve whatever language he would have for an assessment of the ballot measure, and they would have to wait until that time, 2 months out, to continue gathering signatures. So it really condenses their time frame here, and it doesn't sound like something they're interested in doing. So they're just going to bypass that altogether.
Sure. Seth Tupper, any thoughts on marijuana ballot measures, or should we move on to something that you've been working on?
I think you guys covered it well.
Yeah, let's go to Nemo, because I'm looking at this article that you wrote about the Forest Service and Nemo wells. Do you want to start there, or did you have something else that you've got cooking right now?
Yeah, no, that's fine. This story kind of put the tied the ribbon on an issue that's many years, even decades old. Back in the 60s and 70s, the U.S. Forest Service used to use this substance called ethylene dibromide, or EDB, to spray pine trees and try to kill pine beetles. And in the 60s and 70s, apparently some corroded canisters of this stuff was buried at the Nemo Work Center in the little town of Nemo in the Black Hills, northwest of Rapid City. And they just kind of sat there, and then the decades went by, and people started finding out that EDB is not too good for you, and it can seep into the groundwater, and it can cause cancer. And so over the years, there was an effort to find out if there was any seepage into the groundwater in Nemo, and it turned out when they studied it in the 90s, there had been, and a bunch of the wells there were contaminated. And so then years of study ensued. The Forest Service built a temporary water system for the people of Nemo that were affected. They had another well outside of Nemo and piped the water in from there. And then in the meanwhile, they tried to figure out, okay, can we clean up this contamination? And they never could pinpoint exactly the size of the contamination plume or the exact source or anything like that. So they finally kind of gave up and decided, well, let's just put everybody that's affected in Nemo, let's put them back on their contaminated wells, but let's give them filters to attach to those wells to filter out the harmful stuff as it comes into the house. This was a couple of years ago. And the people in Nemo were outraged about that. Some of them were anyway, just didn't see where, since they'd been on this temporary water system that the Forest Service provided from a clean well for years, why were you trying to put me back on my contaminated well with a filter? And so after two more years passed by, and the Forest Service finally recently, last month, put out a new decision saying, well, we're just going to take that temporary water system we built in the 90s with a clean well, and we're going to improve it, make it permanent, and basically we're going to give the affected water users in Nemo free water from the Forest Service, for as long as their wells are contaminated.
Wow. Long time coming. What's the impact or the sort of, feedback from folks in Nemo?
Well, they're just relieved. They haven't, they've been on the temporary water system that was built in the 90s, and they've never had a problem with it, and they've had clean water. So when, as you can imagine, when somebody told them, well, we're going to put you back on your own well, which is, in fact, still contaminated, but don't worry, we're going to give you a filter, they didn't like that very much. So,
right.
presumably the filter would have worked. There was science behind that, but just the premise of, why are you changing
right.
something that's not broken was sort of the position of the people in Nemo. So,
Let's look at a little bit of national news and talk about the healthcare debate and then bring it home to South Dakota. Any thoughts on sort of how the conversation is going that might impact the upcoming governor's race or the upcoming race for House. Seth, let's start with you. Any thoughts to sort of kick us off there?
Yeah, what's funny, I think South Dakota is pretty immune to that because, the big races in both the House and the governor's race at this point look to be in the Republican primaries where, the early favorites are running. And in those Republican primaries, I don't think you're going to find much difference between the candidates on their stances on healthcare. Whoever comes out of the primaries for U.S. House and governor, of course, if they have Democratic opponents or independent opponents, then you'll have healthcare as an issue. But, in a state that Donald Trump won handily, in a state that is dominated by Republicans as far as the number of registered voters, I really don't see it being, Democrats and independents will try to make it an issue, but they'll probably have a steep hill to climb in that regard, as there are an awful big mass of people in South Dakota who feel the same way that they'd like to see Obamacare repealed and replaced, and I think they'll hear from Republican candidates who pretty much agree with them on that.
Dana Ferguson, your thoughts on that, and how does Congresswoman Kristi Noem fare, you know, coming and leaning into the governor's race based on some of the things that happened in Congress during her tenure?
I would imagine it can only help her as far as her Republican supporters, that she is one of the individuals who cast a vote in support of the AHCA earlier this spring, and essentially fulfilled the promise that Republicans have been making for years now, saying that they wanted to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. She was one of the individuals that cast a vote, along with now Senators Thune and Rounds, although the Senate proposals weren't successful in making it out of that chamber. All South Dakota delegates at this point have cast their votes of support, saying we don't want the ACA. I don't think that's been something they've hidden as far as their opinions over the last few years, but they've been able to back that up. Now some of the question comes in as far as what's going to come next. I spoke with Senator Rounds earlier today, as well as with a spokesman for Senator Thune about their desire to maintain some of the cost-sharing reduction payments that President Trump has talked about over the last couple of days. He's essentially threatened to get rid of some of those if there isn't a more constructive conversation about health care reform in the next couple of weeks. Both senators said they want to maintain those payments, which help out lower-income people in affording their health insurance plans. And they're pretty important in South Dakota. They help more than 16,000 people. So it's not surprising that while both senators have said they want to see some meaningful health care reform, they want to make sure that the president is not taking those payments away.
Sure. Seth, let's talk about rattlesnakes and how they sort of play in on the upcoming race. And we're going to start West River, where the rattlesnakes roam more freely. I don't get it. Explain to me why this is a deal. And, you know, for that person who's driving through South Dakota and just found South Dakota Public Broadcasting Radio, they don't know what we're talking about. So lay it out a little bit about the rattlesnake brouhaha.
Well, first I'll say, finally, you get to the important stuff.
But, I should have led. I buried the lead. Really? Kara Hatlin always says, don't bury the lead.
You know, Chantel Krebs really started this. The current South Dakota Secretary of State, a Republican who is running for the Republican nomination for U.S. House in 2018. Last year, she posted a video on social media talking about the fact that she had killed a rattlesnake on her ranch outside of Fort Pierre. And that kind of went a little bit viral, and some media outlets did stories on it, and then it just kind of went away. Well, time has passed, and one of her opponents in the race for the Republican nomination is Dusty Johnson, former chief of staff to Governor Dennis Dugard. And lo and behold, here, I guess it was last week, he was helping to lead a teenage Republican camp here in the Black Hills. And he and some other campers stumbled across a rattlesnake late at night, and he, I guess, dashed into a nearby shed and grabbed an axe and chopped off the rattlesnake's head. And, of course, all of this, because of the day and age we live in now, was captured on a smartphone and posted to social media. And I think Dusty and the people around him immediately recognized the appeal or kind of the political appeal they could get out of this, and there's obviously, with Chantel Krebs's previous video, it's kind of a, well, I see your rattlesnake slaying, and I raise you mine. So it was kind of funny in that regard. And how many races do you see where two of the most known things about the candidates, about each of the candidates, is that they've both killed rattlesnakes? So it's somewhat humorous in that regard.
Dana, you did a survey, right, at the Argus Leader, which one was a little bit more impressive, killing with an axe or killing with a pistol? Did you get the results?
I did. The winner, as far as what is the more, I guess, intense or aggressive way of slaying a rattlesnake, was by axe rather than by pistol. So let the record reflect that the people of Twitter thought that was more impressive. Whether the voters are going to agree with that, yet to be seen. I am curious, too, if this will become a bipartisan requirement for entering the race, or if any other Republicans who enter the race are going to feel like they have to slay a rattlesnake before they can really be a Republican candidate. And what does that mean for the rattlesnakes out there? Are they worried? It's just so many questions.
All right, Seth, is that like a thing? Do you have to, are there lots of ways to kill rattlesnakes? And have you done this yourself? Are you,
no,
are you,
sadly,
are you shoring up your political future?
Thanks for outing me. I have not killed a rattlesnake, so it's going to diminish me in the eyes of our West River readers out here. But, you know, I would like to say, all joking aside, you know, the funny thing is, in a race like this with two people in a Republican primary who probably aren't going to have much to distinguish themselves from each other based on issues, they're probably going to agree on a lot of issues. You know, as funny as it seems and as ridiculous as it sounds, things like this are going to be, you know, ways that they're going to try to pierce through and, you know, grab some attention and get some momentum. Because, you know, in a race where you basically agree with your opponent on most things, how do you separate yourself? And so you got to use some innovative campaigning. And, you know, I would expect to see things like this as we go forward to try for somebody to try to stand out from the other.
Seth Dusty Johnson stopped by the Rapid City Journal recently, didn't he? Or y'all talked to him and remaining ever optimistic, right? Definitely an optimistic campaign so far.
Yeah, I was not part of that conversation. I interviewed him the following day about the rattlesnake. Again, only the important stuff is what I do.
What did you ask him? Wait, now stop everything. What did you ask him about the rattlesnake? Tell us that conversation.
You know, I came in that morning, and somebody who gets here before I do had seen it on social media and asked if I wanted to do a story. And I said, you bet I do, because I was aware of Chantel Krebs. I just thought it was funny. And so I called him and I just asked him what happened. And, you know, if he'd been frightened, he told me he was not. I said, what were you thinking about what would have happened if you, you know, swung the axe and missed?
Right, yeah.
Because no.
It's being recorded now.
He had boots on, he said, so he thought that was somewhat of a protection if the rattlesnake would have lunged at him and tried to bite him. But, so it was, you know, and we did get some feedback on that. Some people, why would you cover that? You know, this is trivial. This is,
right.
I don't know. Not everything has to be serious, you know. We thought it was funny. I think some people would agree, and it's just a kind of a lighthearted story, a nice break from some of the more serious issues of the day.
People are asking that right now as we continue to talk about it. Like, what? Isn't there nothing else? And there is. There's plenty of things to talk about. But every once in a while, it's fun to just have a good rattlesnake story. Although, as
absolutely.
Dana said, I don't know if that's a good rattlesnake story for the snakes. Dana, save us here with one more thing, and we'll close. Well, you know what? I think that we're pretty good. So ArgusLeader.com, you can find Dana Ferguson's work there. Dana, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Seth Tupper, RapidCityJournal.com, you can find his work there. Seth, always a pleasure.
You bet.